No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008 or Skype us at BBSRADIOONE. Maria's off this week vacationing in Mexico. I hope she's having a wonderful time. And we have a special guest co-host, Anish Jenkins, an old friend of the show and an expert on D.C. statehood. And the reason that we've asked her on tonight to come on is because we also have another expert on statehood, Nelson Rimmenschneider. And Nelson was on the D.C. Committee of Congress that oversaw the district for many years, that control funding and other things, appropriations from Congress. He knows everything there is to know about the history of voting rights, budget autonomy, the way the District of Columbia was run, the statehood movement. So we're really, really, really excited to have him on the show. Anish, are you there? Anish,
yes,
can you
I'm
hear
here.
Us? Oh, okay.
I can hear you.
Okay. Nelson, are you there?
Oh, yes, I'm here.
Well,
everything's coming through fine.
Great. Thank you for joining us tonight, Nelson, and thank you, Anish, for being on to help me fill in for Maria, because I know nobody wants to hear me talk for an hour. So first, let me start by saying what a thrill it is to have somebody as knowledgeable as you on the show to talk about statehood, Nelson. I know that you've got an upcoming lecture going on at the Women's Democratic Club in Washington, D.C., and we'll talk about that in a few minutes and hope that, you know, we can get some people over there to listen to you, because I'm sure you have a lot of fascinating things to say. But I'd like to start out, and this Anish might want to ask some questions about this too, but Anish and I went to the Republican convention in D.C. the other day and were just amazed at how many people were there. Weren't you amazed, Nelson?
Oh, yes, very much so. Yes, there's a lot of interest in the national election, and I think that the candidates that came out well, Marco Rubio got 10 of our 19 delegates, and John Kasich, 9. And I think it shows the continued history of the local party, where we've been moderate Republicans. We don't go for the extremes. We've been very supportive of D.C. voting rights and home rule. And so we're very pleased with the turnout and the results of our primary convention.
Yeah, I am too. And Anish, please jump in here. But I mean, Anish and I were talking to people in line, and they were very supportive. Don't you think, Anish?
Yes, that they were absolutely. I was really kind of surprised, because I thought I was going to came with my brochures, and Senator Brown had his 51 buttons, and we were talking to people, and quite a few were very receptive. They were interested. I had one lady say, you know, it's a disgrace that I'm paying taxes and I don't have a vote in the Congress. So I didn't see anyone, maybe there were one or two people that just weren't interested or they were kind of negative. But in general, these people were supportive. So we need them. We need that party to co-sign on that bill.
That's exactly right. And America, if the Republicans and the Democrats can get along in the District of Columbia, how about this guy's on Capitol Hill trying it every once in a while? Anyway, Nelson, let's move on. Can you give us a brief history lesson on how the district was established and what the original former government was? Because Anise and I often talk about what's gone on in recent years because we've been involved, but we really don't talk much about how the whole thing came about in the beginning. Can you give us a little primer on that?
Certainly. The and it gets up into the the local drive for statehood and voting rights. The first proposal was in 1801 that we have a territorial government, that the whole district be one government, and it have a governor and a legislative assembly. But what happened was there were charters here in Georgetown and Alexandria on the Virginia side, and those local pals wanted to keep their charters. Of course, they had, local power. So they went to Congress. They still had some influence with senators in Virginia and Maryland, and they got that proposal for creating a unified government of a governor and a legislative assembly of 45 members put aside, and what we got was a charter in the city of Washington and one in Georgetown and one in Alexandria, and the surrounding counties had commissioners. And so that's what we had until 1871. When Congress again did put in a territorial government with a governor and a legislative assembly. And when the Home Rule Bill was going through in 1973, the local District of Columbia Party testified in favor of having a governor and a legislative assembly. The idea was we're more like a state. We're not a municipality. Right. And unfortunately, the local Democratic establishment pushed for a municipality, a governor, a mayor, and a council, like a municipality. And I think that was a big mistake on the part of the local establishment. Interestingly, the only person to come out in favor of the governor and the legislative assembly was Marion Barry. He could see from the beginning that this was important. That we were going to have state-level functions and responsibilities, and we should be reflected in that in our form of government. And so when I ran against Eleanor Holmes Norton, that was my platform, that Eleanor put in a bill to change the name of the mayor, the governor, and the council, the legislative assembly, and maybe even increase the number of members of that council, make it more representative of the district. And so that's kind of a background on the Home Rule getting when I worked on the committee in 1973 and what went on and some of the history of that. And I think that the statehood people should really get together. We should really get together on this and push for giving us a form of government that's more like what a state would be, and start implementing parts of the Constitution that we approved, that to have a governor and a legislature. And we can start putting parts of the statehood into effect, at least in form. And I think that would help make our case for stronger for statehood.
Now, the current bill, the way, this is Anise, just a question, because I'm really fascinated that you know this history, too. The bills as composed now, the one in the Senate and the House that we have, don't they say that part of the enactment would be that D.C. would have like counties, and we would have a governor, and we would have senators? Isn't that what the current legislation says?
Well, I don't know if you want to answer that, Nelson, but I don't think it says that. I think it says that. I don't think it sets us up with
it would be up to the legislature,
right,
under statehood, to determine whether we were going to have municipalities, counties, or what forms of government we'd have under statehood. That wouldn't carry over. That would be up to the legislature of the new state.
Although I restrict it.
I'm sorry, Anise. Although I think that what you said has been discussed in the past, Anise. Let me ask you something, Nelson. Why do you think originally they turned down that proposal to be more like a state? Do you think it's because it was a power thing? Because the people...
Yeah, it was the local, the local politicians. And, they had... mayors, elected mayors, and a council in Georgetown, and Alexandria, the city of Alexandria, that they existed. They were charters that were given by the legislatures in Maryland and Virginia, and so they wanted to keep those, and they didn't want they didn't want to see one government for the whole District of Columbia, for the Virginia side and the Maryland side, be under a governor and a legislature. Now, the legislature might have chosen eventually to honor those charters or give charters to those cities, but again, they might not have. And so they appealed to their the Maryland people and the Virginia people, appealed to their senators, and even though they weren't in those states anymore. But they had some influence there, and those senators were able to stop the legislation to give us a unified government with a governor and a legislature for the entire District of Columbia. And so it was really, that's just basic political behavior. Politicians have what they have. It's like there's a lot of resistance now in our council to do any of this because they've got 13 members. They have a lot of power. They don't want to see 45 members. Oh, my goodness, in a legislature. They like it the way it is. And, they don't. They would see that as dilution of their power. And so we have a very conservative council that doesn't want to even look at the charter and make major changes like that in the size of the council or make it a legislature. And so there's a lot of resistance there, and that's because they like the way it is. It only takes 7 members of the council to pass legislation. 7 members. And remember, their powers are like that of a state legislature in many cases. And can you imagine a state legislature having just 7 members being able to pass major legislation? It's unprecedented.
Yeah, and that's something that people, first of all, God bless you for saying that, because not a lot of people say that people in the district, in the Wilson building, are not in favor of this. And you're absolutely right. Many people inside the Wilson building are not in favor of it. Some people are, but there are many that are not. And, when you consider that they have a $9 billion budget, which is larger than many, many states. New Hampshire, that was my favorite state. We went up there and lobbied them. They have a legislative body that's only one member short of the United States Congress. They have 434 members of their legislative body. And I bet their budget isn't any bigger than the District of Columbia's.
No, and that's more representative. I mean, if we had a 45-member legislature, for example, and breaking down our population, that would be probably about every 20,000 people or less would have a representative, and that would be right. Very much more democratic than what we have now. And different parties would probably be able to elect members. Republicans would have a better chance of electing members to the legislature. Statehood party members would have a better opportunity to elect members to the legislature, so their voices could be heard. It would be a much more democratic situation. But the council just doesn't. Our elected officials don't want to hear that because they like the power that they have, which is very significant and very concentrated.
Yeah. Well, let me get my co-host in here, Niece.
Yeah.
What do you think of this? You had a lot of friends in the Green Party, wonderful statehood people like Hilda Mason. What do you think of this idea? You think that it would give us a chance to get more people like that involved in government?
Nationally, the two-party system is really antiquated on a national level, and definitely locally, we need more choices. It's obvious. Both sides have become establishment, just as the Republican Democratic Party is on a national level. And it's all about self-interest at this point, just staying in office. And it's not really working the will of the people. I would like to ask Mr. Ryan Snyder, the fact that we do have legislation before the House and Senate, the fact that people in D.C. back in the 80s voted for statehood, something has to happen. The council can't just continue to block. Is that legal?
Hello?
For them to take no action whatsoever?
Well,
can you hear?
Eleanor Holmes Norton should be introducing legislation like this. She will not meet with the Republican members of the Republican committee here to discuss these proposals. She won't even meet with us. She is a big obstacle. She is an obstacle like the mayor is and members of the city council to expanding the members of the legislature. Making it more representative. She could introduce legislation changing the title of mayor to governor. We should have a governor.
It would have to be approved by the Congress. Do you think the Congress would approve it?
Well, we should start. They're not approving statehood.
Right.
So let's start with some baby steps and start moving there and get some discussion on this. I mean, there's Republican support for this. I think there's probably more Republican support for this than there is among the Democratic establishment. You know, it's certainly there's much support in the statehood party for it, but I don't see it in the Democratic Party here in D.C.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, but yes, I agree with that. And, you know, that's something that's very seldom discussed. I think we assume that because the Democratic Party has traditionally, or recently anyway, in recent history, supported statehood, that they support it in all its forms. But, you may be absolutely right about that, Nelson, that they don't support these interim ideas because they see it as a dilution of their power. And you're right. That's typical politics. It's typical politics. And that's why people need to stand up and get this done and not rely on, not assume that their council members or their politicians are making it happen. Hey, Anise, can I ask you a question? Will you tell us briefly how you got involved in the movement and people that don't understand or haven't followed the show a lot know Anise. Anise has been the heart and soul of this movement for many, many years for the statehood movement. But what motivated you to get involved? I think that's an interesting story.
Well, I'm a native Washingtonian, which means I went to D.C. schools. I graduated from Howard University. The discussion about D.C. and the lack of rights that we have was never prominent in the schools that I went to, even public. It just wasn't on the agenda. It wasn't on the curriculum. Being interested in national politics and being a supporter of the Democratic Party, in 1995, something called the Control Board took over all powers of the council. And that was something I didn't think was possible. This control board was made up of people who were not elected by anyone, any D.C. resident, which is unheard of. So this went on for about 2 years, and I listened to what was happening, to our lack of rights, to the fact that these people who we didn't know, had not elected, could impose anything they wanted upon D.C. residents. And in 1997, it had a lot to do with the fact that we had reelected someone that the Congress opposed, who was Marion Barry. In 1997, the Congress struck down every power that the D.C. Council had, every local power but parks and recreation, as a reaction to Marion Barry being reelected. I could not believe that this was possible. We're supposed to be the democratic country of the world. And here we have, Senator Fairclough from North Carolina, a pig farmer, who just decided that, no, I don't like what you did, and I'm going to take care of it. And not only did he do that to us, but he campaigned on it at home, saying, I've got those people in D.C. under control. They're fraternizing with Marion Barry and Louis Farrakhan and Jesse Jackson, and a lot of it was very racially motivated, or at least that's the way he campaigned at home. So I heard on the radio that there was a group that had formed to oppose the fact that everything had been swept away, all our democratic rights. They were meeting, and the bill was signed by President Clinton, our democratically elected and Democrat president, Bill Clinton, and this group said, meet us on the gate of the White House, and we're going to protest this, and we're going to go to jail. And that sounded right to me. That sounded like something I wanted to do. So I said, okay, I want to get out of jail. I want to have to be stuck there. I put $50 in my shoe. I got a cab, so I'd be on time, and I went down to the protest. And ever since then, I have been fighting for just the basic citizenship right that everybody else has, a government of, by, and for the people, where nobody could interfere with our local government, nobody could interfere with our local budget, nobody could interfere with our basic citizenship right. And I've been doing it ever since, and it has to be done. I don't know how. I think we should be a state. That's the only protection that we can have, is having a state from those type of actions. Even New York was taken over by a control board, but they had locally elected officials on that control board. I'm going to continue to fight until we become the 51st state. And I want Mr. Ryman Snyder to respond, because he's not a supporter of states.
Oh, you're wrong about that.
I am.
Okay.
Totally wrong about it.
I didn't know that.
But the way you're going about it is wrong, Anise. We got to do this in steps. It's got to be incremental. You just cannot run in there with a statehood bill. For instance, the charter that was passed, that has not been voted on by the people.
That has
to be voted on by the people before you can go to Congress and ask for statehood.
That constitution
has to be voted on, and it hasn't been.
No, I thought we elected. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. You're the expert on this, Nelson.
Uh-huh.
I thought we elected the people that represented us at the Constitutional Convention, and that they...
That's right, but that Constitution has been rejected by the Council, and they rewrote the Constitution.
They rewrote it.
That has not been submitted to the people. The other Constitution is no longer in effect. It has been overturned by the elected Democratic officials of the District of Columbia. and that has not been submitted to the people for a vote. Until that happens, going up there with statehood bills, why didn't the Senate vote on it in committee? They couldn't, because that has not been approved by the people of the District of Columbia. That is the Tennessee plan that they're going on. And so Anise, you've got to get that before the vote of the people. You're going about this backwards. I'm sorry, but that's the way it is.
Wow, well, we've got to look into that, because that's surely not my understanding of it, is that, we work under the impression that we are qualified and that we have qualified under the tenets of having an appropriate population, having held a constitutional...
Yes, we have all that, but you have to have that constitution approved. It hasn't been voted on by the people. It's only been voted on by the council. And that is not the legal way you go for statehood under the Tennessee plan. And you are a Tennessee senator. You should be advocating, Senator Brown, to get that before the people for a vote. And then
well,
we can
Ryan
go, to the,
Snyder,
then we can go to the Hill with legislation.
If that's true, why aren't you talking about that rather than these other forms that you put forth? If you support statehood,
well, I am. I'm for that. I'm for that being voted on. I absolutely am. But you're not, and the elected officials of D.C. are not.
So you're saying
I am. I want to see it voted on. I want to see it voted on, Anise.
Mm-hmm.
I do, but I don't think you do.
Well I think that. I
don't think Senator Brown does.
I'll let Anise speak for herself because she's very articulate. But I will say to you that I want the most expedient route to statehood, and my understanding is different than yours, Nelson.
I've got a paper by the Congressional Research Service, Senator Brown, that says the procedure under the Tennessee plan, which you're a Tennessee senator, that's the procedure, and it's not being followed. You are not following it.
Right. I don't argue that point with you, that is the procedure, and it has been traditionally the procedure. The point that I argue is that it's necessary. But why don't we take a little break here and recoup, and we'll be back in a minute, folks. We're going to play a song from a classic song from Nina Simone, and
okay.
We'll be back in 3 minutes.
Okay.
Thank you.
we're back. Anise, are you all right? And
yes.
Nelson, hey, Anise brought up a good point. Nelson, I'd like you to talk about this because I know you've had a campaign out there to end taxation. What is that about?
Well, I think to get attention to our plight here, that we are taxed without our consent, and Congress can enact any kind of laws anytime they want, and we don't have any real authority here. And I think that if we take the route that we be exempt from federal income taxation until we get statehood or representation in Congress of some kind. In 1994, the City Council passed a law, D.C. Law 10222, that says the official policy of the District of Columbia is that we petition Congress to be exempt from federal income taxation until we are represented in Congress as though we were a state. That's the law. The D.C. Republican Party has endorsed that, and it's in our platform. And that's what we're pursuing. Eleanor Holmes Norton had a bill in to do that. And two Congresses got 120 co-sponsors. Now that Republicans have put one in, she's against it. And I can't get any kind of reasonable explanation out of her why she is now against it. Because it would bring attention to our plight, to our grievance, our central grievance, that we are taxed without our consent, that we're subject to all the laws of Congress without our consent. And I think the national media would pay attention to that if we all would unite behind that and take that to Congress and the country. I think it would bring attention to the entire movement. I think it would be a big boost for statehood. And I don't understand why the statehood people aren't getting behind it. I really don't.
Well, isn't the guy from California, doesn't he put that bill in, Rohrabacher, doesn't he put that bill in every Congress?
Okay, I'll try and get a better location.
Hello?
Okay, yeah, I think we're having a little static with Nelson. I think you're going to try to
it's a little better now.
Oh, yeah, much better.
Okay.
But doesn't Dana Rohrabacher, doesn't he put that bill in? All the time, Nelson?
Well, he has a bill in that we vote in elections in Maryland.
Yeah.
Federal elections in Maryland. That we vote for their senators, we vote for two senators, mm-hmm. and have a representative, but we still would be the District of Columbia, and still for local, all our laws would still be subject to congressional review and all of that. His bill would eventually take us back to 1801. From 1799 to 1801, we were represented in Maryland and Virginia. We voted for the Senate. We had senators there. We had representatives.
Right.
And so essentially his bill would restore that, but we would still be under Congress as far as our local laws are concerned and our budget and all of that.
We called it a retrocession light, the Rohrabacher bill.
Right.
But
it's all coming back to me now. This happens when you get old. You forget these things.
I know at one time our organization did oppose the trading of not paying taxes for not really having our rights. We just decided that we didn't support that. And I think we can still highlight the fact that we do pay the highest federal taxes without having our rights, without actually doing that. Because I think one thing that supporters of statehood have learned, if we haven't learned anything else over the last 20 years, when you're talking about this Utah bill for one district and voting rights that are going to get struck down immediately, an amendment and all that. We've learned that when you distract from your goal, when you distract from what your true mission is, which the people of D.C. have said is statehood, They didn't say they were for incremental. They didn't say they were for voting rights. They didn't say they were for not paying taxes. The people of D.C. voted for statehood. When you distract and start sending out these mixed messages, it just doesn't work. At this point, we have 130 co-sponsors in the House, and we have, 19 or 20 in the Senate. And I think we should continue to build on what we have. And I know it'll be, but I do agree with you, Mr. Ryman Snyder, that tax issue is very important to highlight what we are seeking. It's very important, and I'm glad that you are focusing on it. But
well,
I wouldn't support a bill.
Well, I hope you will come to the Republican Party's demonstration, Denise. I've been to many of your demonstrations.
Mm-hmm.
And
yours.
It's, 15th, 5:30 in front of the east front of the Capitol. And I invite anybody else who's listening. And I've marched in almost all the parades on that the city has sponsored, and the D.C. Vote has sponsored, that the statehood party has sponsored. And I'm just looking for, some reciprocity. Anise, states come in with bipartisan support. You say you've got 130 co-sponsors, they're all Democrats.
I know. We want your party to get on the ball.
We want your
party to get on the ball now, okay?
You start voting. Start voting for some Republicans in D.C. How about it?
Mm-hmm.
I ran 4 times, and nobody came out and said, let's have Democrats for Ryman Snyder. Let's get him up there. Let's send a bipartisan delegation to the Hill. Wouldn't that be something? No. Until that happens, Anise,
you can announce that you're a Republican for statehood. That's very significant.
I'm saying,
be careful, Anise. He's going to run against
me. That could be the ultimate. That's what might happen. I'm not saying at this point I support the statehood bill. What I support now is that we vote on that statehood, on that constitution. That's what we have to do first. And it has to pass with 90% of the vote, Anise. States are not admitted unless there's overwhelming support. Statehood has only gotten 60% of the vote the times it's been up. That's not enough.
It was enough. It was a majority vote. That's what we
did. But Congress requires a 90%. Congress is not going to admit a state unless the people overwhelmingly want to become a state. You look at the votes in Alaska and Hawaii, 90%, Anise, 90%. We've got to get that here. We've got a lot of work to do. We're nowhere near that.
You know what, Nelson? We just had a poll published in the Washington Post, and 70, it's not 60% anymore, 71% of all registered voters in the District of Columbia, regardless of party affiliation, support statehood. So
you got to get up to 90%.
If the threshold has to go up, we're certainly getting there. But before
we go any further, tell people we've got some more work to do. You're right. Go ahead.
Tell people how they can get more information on showing up for your protests. Do you have a website or something they can go to and get some information about showing up?
Yeah, the D.C. Republican Party has a website.
Okay.
I don't have it right here. I can get it if we take another break. They can call me. It's on my cell at 550-0794. I can give them the information, 550-0794. I'll be giving out information at the Women's Democratic Club on Thursday about the it's the 15th, so there's plenty of time to get the word out. It's the 15th of April, of course, Tax Day, that we're having our rally and we're inviting Eleanor Holmes Norton to come and speak to us. She really should. She's got to start engaging with local Republicans. She will not talk to us.
I agree with that.
Problem. Maybe she doesn't talk to you either.
She does talk to me, but only at, no, I'm teasing. She does talk to us, but you know, in fact, we talked to her yesterday. Although I will say that the first time I met with her, I asked the other Senator Paul Strauss. I said, I've never met with Congresswoman Norton. What should I say? And he said, why don't you try saying hello? And that's exactly what happened. I said hello, and an hour later, I walked out without getting another word in edgewise. So she does. Yeah. She does now, us a lot.
Now, another thing that the D.C. Republican Party has supported and still does is having a delegate in the Senate. That has passed with bipartisan support, overwhelming bipartisan support, twice in the House of Representatives. It's gotten over to the Senate, and they've rejected it twice under Democratic control. And I think we should try and push for that. It'd be wonderful to have equivalent of Eleanor Holmes Norton on the Senate side pushing for lining up support for statehood. But
I absolutely agree with that. And, absolutely agree with that. I think that would be tremendous.
I can't get her to introduce the bill. And I'd like us all to try and get together and go meet with her. I think we should all ask for a meeting with her to discuss some of these things. The problem is she's very isolated. She only talks to certain groups and certain people. And I think that's wrong. And I'd love to have a delegate in the Senate. For 6 years, somebody over there to speak for us and serve on committees and introduce legislation. And it could happen. It's passed twice with bipartisan. Even the Federal City Council has come out with a study supporting it. We could get the business community talking to her. But you know, until she'll start meeting with us, we can't get any of these ideas before her and maybe introduced. And,
is she the only one who could introduce that?
Pardon?
It
can be introduced in the Senate. When Senator Carper had his hearings, he kept saying to the two senators and representative and Mrs. Norton and the other representatives, is there any other kind of an interim proposal that you would consider to have some kind of representation? Well, the obvious one would be, and this for the Senate, is that we have at least the equivalent of what we have in the House. A delegate. And as I say, it's passed the House twice with overwhelming bipartisan. It passed 323-3 in 1970. And it was passed when the Home Rule Bill was going through without a dissenting vote in the House. Without a dissenting vote. The House has been supportive of it. It gets over to the Senate, and they say, oh, no, we don't want anybody over here unless you're a state. And I mean that's wrong, and you know, I'd like to see Michael Brown or you and Niece in the Senate.
Yes, well, I'd vote for that.
I want no unpaid. I don't need another unpaid job.
Yeah.
Okay,
no,
and I don't need
an unpaid job. It wouldn't be an unpaid job.
I don't need another one.
You would draw a senator's salary.
Right.
You would have a senator's staff.
I think I have two people ahead of me, Senator Brown and Senator Strauss. You know, but I do want to make clear before we go ahead that I am executive director of Stand Up for Democracy in D.C., which is a nonpartisan organization. I myself originally registered as an independent. My father was a Republican. A lot of African Americans back in the 50s were Republicans, and I just want to say this issue is completely, in my view, nonpartisan. It's all about what's right, and I just want to straighten that out.
Well, you know what? Let me just say, yeah, that's absolutely true, and I can tell you that young people are amazed when I go out and lecture and say, for example, that Dr. King was also a Republican. Lots of African Americans were Republicans in the 50s and 60s, and people don't understand that. And you're right, Nelson. I sat there when asked the question by Senator Carper. I consider budget autonomy, which I don't consider a resolution for us, and I considered some of the other things that have been proposed as non-solutions. I sat there with everybody else and said statehood is the only solution, no interim steps. But if I had considered what you just said, I would reconsider what I said. I mean, it just didn't cross my mind to put a delegate in the United States Senate. But I think that would be a great idea. And correct me if I'm wrong, that's what Tennessee did. Didn't Tennessee send both their senators to Washington?
Did.
And both their senators were seated, although they weren't allowed to vote?
Yes, they were given chairs on the side of the legislature. Yeah, yep. Yep.
Oh, and well, let's go for it.
So there's precedent for it. There's precedent for it. And we should press for it. We really should.
I agree with that. Mm-hmm.
And I think that we should have a meeting and you know, certainly as a Democratic elected official, and I'm sure, you know, I can't speak for other Democratic elected officials, but I'm sure we could get others that would be happy to sit down with the Republican Party. Because, first of all, Republicans have local Republicans have always supported our efforts. That's number one.
That's
and number
right.
two, I've been a lifelong Democrat. But having a single party system is not a healthy thing to do. And I'm happy that if we have to have a single party system, it's the Democrats, because that benefits me. But I'd really like to see a healthier, more vibrant interaction with Republicans. And I'd like to see Republican elected officials in the District of Columbia. It would help our cause. It would make our city a healthier place. It killed me when Carol Schwartz was ambushed by her own party and thought she was a good legislator and you know, and I could tell you, Nelson, when we used to go up to the Hill and we'd take Mayor Fenty and other people with us, a few Democrats would call and would come over and talk to us, but every Republican in that House of Representatives knew who Carol Schwartz was, and she was an important player for
there
us
you go. Sure.
there because
sure.
they all knew her. Yeah,
I agree. She was fantastic. I really do agree with that.
Sure.
Yeah.
And she would still be there if she had supported vouchers.
Right.
Her own party did her in. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, well, she didn't support vouchers. She didn't support the party. It was the problem.
Right.
And
the local
party was very, very supportive of vouchers, and she was against them. And I went out to collect signatures to get her on the ballot, and a lot of Republicans would not sign because she came out against vouchers. And it was supported by the national party and the local party. And it was a very, very basic, platform of both parties, and she did not support it. And I don't understand to this day why, because the teachers' unions never gave her a nickel, and and of course it's still an issue. The council and the mayor have sent a letter to the Hill supporting vouchers, and Eleanor Holmes Norton is still against them.
She's for public education. She's for paying for public education.
Right.
Well,
and
so am I, but it's an alternative to it. A lot of people drowned in the public education system. This is a way for some people to get out of it and get ahead. And it's federal money. It's not local money. And that's why the mayor and the city council are for it. It's federal money, and we should not be turning it down. Really.
Well, that's an argument for another day, and we're going to have you back to talk about that. But we have Taboo, who's a caller on line 3, and I'd like to give him a chance to answer, to ask a question. Taboo, are you there?
Go ahead.
I'm here, yes. And my question is, constitutionally, don't all citizens in a Republican form of government have a right to participate in government?
Nelson, you want to handle that? You're our
Well, there have been Exactly. I mean, that's the basic.
The answer is yes.
But the way the district was set up under the Constitution, it doesn't have those prerogatives. Unfortunately, there are ways we can address that, and that's what we're working on.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Taboo, okay. Are you there?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Okay. I didn't know you were speaking. Yes, they did it, but Congress has done a lot of wrong things. They get their authority from us, the people. They cannot do anything they want. If they pass a law, if it's not constitutional, then it's no law at all. So we don't need baby steps, I don't think, Nelson, as you said. I think we need a sledgehammer and a jail. Send a lot of folk there because our constitutional rights are being denied.
Well, that's true enough, Taboo, but I think that legally, not to necessarily defend the other position, but I think legally we found out, unfortunately, that you can't have things declared unconstitutional that are actually written into the Constitution. And that really is the catch-22 for us, Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution.
Well, does Congress have a right to change the Constitution without our approval? Well, let me ask you this question, because I know you're short on time. Is there anything to the Act of 1871, or is that just talk?
Well, I'll let our historian answer that question.
Well, I would like to return to having a governor and a legislative assembly. I think that's the way, you know, territories have come in with that form of government. And I think that's what we should seek. That's what we should see.
The Tennessee plan will not allow you to come back in under that. The question, though, is totally separate. Is there such thing as the Act of 1871, whereas D.C. is made a corporation? Is that just a story tale, fairy tale, or what is that?
No. We had it. We had a governor and a legislative assembly here. And, you know, Frederick Douglass served on it. And And it really functioned quite well. It passed some very progressive legislation, doing away with
all... Is the D.C. a corporation? Is the D.C. a corporation?
Well, it is. It is under Congress. It's not independent, but it's been given a charter by Congress. And, of course, Congress has kept certain prerogatives to itself under the... But it can give us much more authority than we have. It doesn't have to approve all of our laws the way it does. It doesn't have to approve our budget. And there have been bills in to do that. And, of course, the citizens even voted on it recently. It's tied
up
in the court still.
Congress gave the land back to the district. Congress gave land back to Virginia. That was illegal, too, wasn't it?
Yes, it was illegal. Yes, it was. You're very right about that. Congress, the Supreme Court in 1876 said it stopped the suit that was going through and said it was illegal, but too much time had passed to bring the suit, unfortunately.
Now, so really what I'm getting at, we have a corrupt Congress, and that's the problem. And just like the Constitution, the 1787 Constitution, just like it did slavery. Slavery was not supposed to be. Congress cannot do anything it wants. And I think we, the people, need to just recognize that their authority comes from us.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and you know, Taboo, I think you're seeing that sentiment that you're expressing going on right now politically. I think that's
exactly
why you have two outside candidates. I don't know how Bernie Sanders got to be an outside candidate because he really has been a senator for a long time, but he somehow managed to place himself outside the box. And that's why I think you've got people attracted to Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders because they're saying, yeah, enough of these guys.
You're 100% right, Senator Brown, but the reason they aren't so much on Bernie is because they recognize that Bernie is supporting an open borders policy. For example, taking in the little children from all over the world. Let's take care of our children first. So I think that's the difference.
Go ahead, Denise. I just wanted to get back to talking about we need stronger parties. One party that needs to really be strengthened, you were talking about Hilda Mason,
Julius Hobson, is the statehood now converged with the Green Party? That party really needs to strengthen if we're going to promote statehood in D.C. We shouldn't have an overwhelming Democratic Party, a halfway functioning Republican Party, and really a statehood Green Party that is forgot that they're statehood Green. Most of them say they're the Green Party. And we really need all of these parties involved in our freedom,
yeah,
in liberating the people of D.C. We need all of them.
And another thing is the council could pass legislation giving us proportional representation, where the statehood party and the Republican Party and the, maybe the Libertarian Party even would have some representation on a expanded legislature. That could happen. But the local council is against any of that because they like the power that they have, and they don't want to concede power to anybody else. And that's our biggest obstacle.
Well, as our mentor Frederick Douglass said, right, that power can seize nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will. And we're the people that have to make the demand. The demand is not going to come from the council.
Right.
It's got to come from the people.
That's right.
And that's why the founders did not want a democracy. They wanted a Republican form of government, as Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution supposedly guarantees. That just as you're describing those seven people, or the majority rule, that's plain out democracy, what the founders call mob rule. In other words, the majority ruling. The majority cannot injure the minority, but that's exactly what we've had, and this is what they continue to do.
Right. Well, we've run out of time here, guys. It's the end of the hour. It's hard to believe, but first, let me thank Taboo for calling in. He's a regular listener, and we appreciate his input. And thank Anise Jenkins
for
helping me along. And most importantly, thanking Nelson Rimming Snyder, who's always been an advocate in our city. I really appreciate your hard work. I know your son is on active duty, is a soldier and also a police officer in the District of Columbia. So you continue to give not only through yourself, but through your family. We hope that he remains safe and get to you and Mrs. Rimming Snyder soon. And before you leave, Nelson, tell people about what you're doing at the National Women's Democratic Club.
Yes, it's Thursday. Thursday at noon, I'm speaking on the history of why we're not represented in Congress and how we can get there. And I'll talk about statehood and what we have to do to achieve that. And I'm going to be fairly brief. I have a PowerPoint presentation, but I want to keep it open for discussion. And I'm looking forward to it, and I invite everybody listening to come. It's at the Women's Democratic Club at DuPont Circle and on New Hampshire Avenue, and it's at noon.
And you know what? You can have a great lunch along with a great lecture and learn something. And the Women's Democratic Club is a beautiful old mansion, so you should go for the atmosphere and for the knowledge and for the food. It's a win-win-win situation. We're going to have Nelson back again, I hope soon, and Anise as well. Thanks for listening, America.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next week.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Thank you.
In the capital of this nation, 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.